Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this episode of An Emerging Forest. And we are 2 days before Halloween on this 29th of October, 2017. And on the East Coast in the United States, it's been raining, not cats and dogs, but medium level. Maybe in some areas it's been cats and dogs, but it's been
cats
raining
and dogs
all day.
Here.
Cats and dogs. Hi, yeah. Welcome, David. How are you this? How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm not wet, but I was out in the rain earlier, so I'm dry now.
So you're in West Philly?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's raining really hard.
I basically have avoided. I went out earlier this morning around. I guess I got back a little bit before noon, and I was shopping for, in the acting and modeling industry, it's called the blue shirt, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The blue shirt that you use for headshots.
I've heard about it.
There's a magical color that is, it's very interesting once you know this magical color, because it's the color of the blue recycled trash cans, and it's the color of the E in Internet Explorer. And
right.
it's a very interesting pervasive blue color, and it's also the color that people who are getting headshots are advised to wear as their shirt or their blouse or whatever they're wearing, because for whatever reason, casting directors will go through page after page of headshots. And all of a sudden, they'll see this blue headshot, and they'll stop, and they'll actually look at that person. So I was given a ride to the Cherry Hill Mall area by my mentor this morning, and we actually went to a couple stores and then went to JCPenney, and I picked up two options, one of which is like the dead on exact match, and the other one is a shirt with a little, it's the same shirt but has just a slightly different shade, but they're two really nice shirts. and they were on sale, and one of them was on clearance, so I got two shirts for $21. And
nice.
those are the first run shirts that I've actually purchased in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, after shopping at thrift stores, sort of on my way back to having an economy, only being able to shop at thrift stores. This was the first time that I actually went to, Ross's, and then we went to Kohl's, and then we wound up being at JCPenney. So I was actually in retail stores shopping first go round clothes.
Wow.
Which is kind of,
it must have been an interesting experience,
like,
itself.
Yeah, it was really interesting to actually, because my friend was basically looking at other stuff and interested in other stuff, and I was walking up down some of the aisles and looking at some of the things that are actually, they actually look like lamps, or they actually look like lamps with sort of interesting shaped lamps, but they're actually rechargeable Bluetooth speakers.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Somebody's a little bit out of touch with what's going on these days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'll email to you. I'm on the phone.
Okay.
I'm in the speaker. Okay. It was my roommate. She sang last night karaoke for me, some of the video. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So.
You ever do karaoke?
Do I do karaoke?
Have you ever done it?
No, I. What?
Have you ever sang in karaoke?
No, I haven't.
Mindless.
Where do you do that?
I was at a Halloween party last night, and they had it.
Oh, okay. They just had one of those, one of the machines or something?
No, they actually had a professional karaoke host. She did a great job.
Oh, okay. Pardon me.
Yeah, right. I who knew, right? You'd rent them for your own house. So it was nice.
Wow, so somebody will come and set up the speakers and have all the music queued up and basically, she's there to encourage people to get up, huh?
Yeah, you know what? Everyone's pretty much into it to begin with, because it's basically a karaoke Halloween party. So she didn't do a lot of encouragement. She did a great job mixing songs and good levels for the microphones and everything. So and a great song list. So it was a positive experience.
Oh, right, and it's interesting with your DJ background. You were able to be a little bit more technically critical and quote unquote inform. Everybody can be a little bit technically critical, but then there's people who are informed, who can be a little bit more, precise and exact. And if you actually said to the person, I really appreciate what you did for this and for this, and because I'm a former whatever, they would appreciate your insight. So someone can be critical, but then someone with insight can make some constructive suggestions, and it's a little bit more valuable.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's very accurate. It's true. And it's good to have expertise a little bit.
Yeah, so that's really encouraging to see that there's some interesting people have some other interesting hustles that they're getting around and getting various jobs. So she's basically, does she just do karaoke, or does she have other
outlets? She gave me a card for a larger. Yeah, she works for a karaoke company. Or entertainment.
Oh, okay. So you can basically rent rent that for an event or just about anything, right?
Yeah, pretty much. This is at a house. So, yeah, it was, if you ever want to do that, just I'll give you the card. You can contact and have them host a karaoke party. But, yeah, you can have them at their house, I guess. So that's fine.
Well, this week we don't really have a topic, and it's very interesting that regardless of what the topic that is introduced on this channel, on this emerging, introduced and comes through the trees of this emerging forest, it almost always winds up being or falling back to or coming forward from every day, which is basically normal psychological / spiritual / mental / mind exploration of either a decrease in fertility or an increase in fertility or something along those lines. And as we've talked in past episodes, I don't view anyone or any part of this process that we see around us as being anything other than natural. So there's sort of, you can look at everyone around you as being analogous to leaves on a tree. And there's leaves on a tree that are just unfurling, and there's leaves on a tree that are in full production of sugar, and then there are leaves on the tree that are being shed in the autumn. And then if you metamorphosize that tree, there are some leaves on some trees are always there. They're quote-unquote evergreen. So there's, from my perspective, maybe if you change your perspective about life and death, and you change your perspective to saying, oh, there's eternal life, but you don't have to do something special to get it. You just have to continue to do the experience that's in front of you. You continue to breathe, continue to act, to continue to do what is in front of you on the menu board. You get to continue to come back, and I think that's everyone. So we also emphasize, okay, if that's the condition of life, if there's complete and utter acceptance, it's sometimes called universal love, and universal love means how I take universal love to be meant is that nothing requires forgiveness. And if there's universal love, everyone accepts everyone else because you're here to do whatever you're here to do. You're here to be the leaf at whatever stage the leaf is at, because everyone is basically waiting for you to get on with it so that you can be, you know, whatever you're going to be next. And that sort of philosophy, the philosophy that I figured out in basically the darkest point of my life, or had an epiphany at some point in my life, was this idea of springing from Rumi's notions of right doing and wrong doing. There's a field, I'll meet you there, is the acceptance of everyone as they are. And what happens as a result of that is you're able to drop all definitions of good and evil. You're able to drop all definitions of ill health. You can't point at someone and say that person is mentally or physically ill because they're just basically a form of relief which that person requires to have an experience as that form in order to move forward, in order to move on. Well, what does this allow me as an individual, the individual who's presenting this perspective, to do? I don't have to worry about how anybody else is doing. I don't have to worry about how I'm doing. And I can also accept that I might want to try various other things in my life that seem pretty odd, or I can push myself really hard to do something that's very much outside of my comfort zone. And one of the things that is pretty natural or pretty accepted in the acting business, especially if you're going to be a background extra, is that you're going to not know if you're working tomorrow until late the previous evening. And in my case, I don't have a vehicle and rely on public transit or buses or that sort of private public transit, but transit that I hire. And so if I find out at 9 o'clock, which I did on Monday, at 9 o'clock p.m., that the show that I want to be on or that I have booked to be on has a 6 a.m. Call time on the Upper East Side, I don't have that many options as to how to get there, because I could immediately leave my house and get to, get on the trains and get up through Trenton on NJT and get deposited at around 2:30 a.m. At Penn Station, and then I've got, I got 3 hours to kill, because it takes a half an hour to get from Penn Station on the subway, on the metro, to the Upper East Side. So the method that I wound up choosing was to get on the Greyhound that leaves 10th and Filbert in Philadelphia at 2 a.m. and gets to the location at 4 a.m., the Port Authority in New York City. And then I would have approximately an hour and a half that I'd be early, but usually people are getting there around an hour before or a little over an hour before anyway, so I wouldn't be out of place getting to the location. So this kind of points out a really interesting wrinkle as far as life goes. And basically, I'm 56 years old, but I'm starting out at the freshman level, or at the intro level, at the neophyte level, in a completely different industry. So if I'm not willing to be, quote-unquote, 22 years old again or 25 years old again, and I want to tell everyone out there that many of the actors who do make the casting call, do make the call time of 6 a.m., are nowhere near that young. But I have to basically look at it and say, okay, it doesn't matter where we're coming from. It doesn't matter what, quote-unquote, disadvantages I have, and that I have to go to the bus station at 2 a.m. and that I have to back time to get on PATCO at a certain time before that, and that, oh, my goodness, it's almost 10 o'clock, and I'm just figuring out all my timing, and I get to sleep for an hour and a half, and then I need to get up and go, and get on the bus. So that's basically what happened. I got up and, a short while later, I basically set my alarm and got an hour and a half of sleep and got up and packed up my things and went out the door at approximately 12:20. I left the house just after midnight. And it was interesting because I got to the Patco station at Ferry Avenue, and, of course, I was traveling westbound across the river into the city, but there was another subway line, there was another high-speed line coming the other way, and it stopped, and it was absolutely jam-packed to the gills, completely full of people. And I was like, what the heck? And I looked at it, and all of a sudden I was like, yeah, I did a facepalm because it was people getting out of the Eagles game. So the Eagles Monday night game had gotten over, and all of those people were getting off of that. And it was all the people with, you know, Eagles shirts and Eagles hats and all kinds of stuff. So that was interesting. Here they are ending their evening, and here I am beginning my day. So I basically got to the bus station, and at about 2 o'clock they announced that the bus was going to be an hour late. And I basically stuck with it because I didn't really have any other options. The bus actually wound up being an hour and a half late, and we made it to the Port Authority in New York at about just before 5:30 in the morning, and I made some fast connections onto the metro and walked a little bit quickly. I didn't run, and was amazed to be 5 minutes early to the casting call. And from then on, I had a very interesting day, because the show I was on was, I've been on various budget level shows, and the show I was on was one in which they're spending a decent amount of money on the production and on basically everything about the show. And it was evident because they had large buses, large tour buses taking us from Holding to the set and back again. And they were going back and forth with us regularly because we went from Holding to set and then back again to Holding for lunch and then back to set and back to Holding for the end of the day. So, and that was only part of their expense. I mean, their other expense was, you know, laying out a lot of food. But then, of course, they rented a huge building, a rather prominent building in New York City, and were filming there, and they had all kinds of, it's basically looking at that and then looking at, in the final outcome, they worked an entire day, and I don't know whether they got, I'm pretty sure they got less than 10 minutes of a show out of that whole day. And just to see how hard they/I work to make a small piece of a television show is very interesting. And I got home, basically was very lucky to make some buses that were earlier than I thought I would. I got home at 10:20, and I had left the house after not really having any sleep the previous night. So I just want to sort of let everyone know, just by example, that you can basically try these things, and you can try things that are outside of your comfort zone. But for the rest of the week, I was pretty much inactive, and I did sleep a lot. And I was very cognizant of needing to sleep. And, hey, everybody, I had a job that I needed to do on Friday, but I don't have a regular job. And that's what allows me to be able to do these things. So I have a little bit of freedom freedom because I don't have much of an economy and I'm trying to build one. And I basically have put this this day of work down as another line item on my resume. So it is going to help me. And meeting people and being in circumstances and meeting people that you've met before on set in New York City is always interesting and is always a good thing. And seeing, so I'm an extra and I'm one of a set of people who's in a crowd in at a particular location. And then you can see, quote unquote, the professionals who are the featured actors who are actually the people who are the stars of the particular show. And you also get to watch the production assistants, and you get to watch the lighting people and the camera people and the directors who are basically concerned with how much light a particular person is getting on their face. And it's been a little while. It's been a few weeks since I talked about sort of giving an example from my own life and basically saying to people, it's okay to really do something outside of your comfort zone. I do it. I'm not really a very good example because I know most people in the extra business or a lot of people in the extra business have full-time jobs, or a lot of people in the acting business in general have full-time jobs. But sometimes you just have to put it out there and say, okay, if I want to get someplace that's different from who I used to be, I'm going to have to do some things in my life that are different from how I am now. Otherwise, I'm just going to stay the same.
Well, that's a good point. I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, if we don't step outside of the comfort zone, so to speak, which is now becoming a cliche, so this is a better word, if we don't go to our edge, if we don't do things that we don't normally do, if we don't take chances and really put it out there, you know, really put our neck on the line, so to speak, we're never going to grow. It's going to be the same moves, the same life. Things won't really change. They may change incrementally, but they won't. And here's the thing. If a person doesn't change, things will change them. So it's like there's two choices. You either make the changes or you allow the changes to make you. And personally, I would prefer the former to the latter. And we change. I mean, you're not the same person you were when you were 5 years old. Neither am I. I'm the same person I was when I was 25 years old. I mean, that person still exists in a sense within us. It's like you said, going back to something that you don't know anything about, you are going back to being 22 in a sense, you know, if you don't know a lot about the acting business or how it all works or the craft of it. And you have to really be open. And it's not always easy. It's not always easy to put, and that's a vulnerability, isn't it? To realize, I don't know a damn thing about this, and I'm going to be in there in this class with these other people who probably know more than me, that may be 10, 15, 20 years younger, and I'm going to be really going into a place of vulnerability and surrender, and there's bravery in that, a lot of bravery, because a lot of people be like, oh, two things would happen, oh, I'm not going to do that, I'm too old for that, or I don't need that crap, or, you know, they'd be like, they wouldn't be able to handle it and would just walk away because they can't allow themselves to be a student again. You know, a lot of people feel the way they get done with graduating school, it ends, but I'm a student anymore. We're always a student and we're always a teacher at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting that we get into this frame of, well, I took my abuse when I was a certain age, and then I took my abuse when I was entering into the business that I am now. And what you don't remember is that there were a bunch of skills that you learned and a bunch of things like that, and that now you're sort of frozen in that mold, And if you're going to get to be exploring something else and working on your expertise as something else, you have to shatter the frozen calcification, and that's extremely painful. And then you have to get back into the understanding that you have to basically open the nerve endings up again and be vulnerable, as you said, to all of the things that happened to you when you were going from being a neophyte in your other job, in your other skill set. You're gonna have to accept all of that again, and that's just how it is. Well, I'd like to take a break right now because it is the bottom of the hour, and I'd like to play Dar the Bard's "How and Toe." Talk to you in a little bit, guys. Bye bye.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
So welcome back, everyone. And as always, this is a call-in show. And if you have something to share or something to chat about, the number here is 646-564-9714. And step outside of your comfort zone and give us a call. So, Dave, you had shared with me this afternoon some interesting things that took place in your life. And instead of jumping right into that, I wanted you to sort of, it's interesting how everything is sort of a ladder progression, and you don't think that you can jump to fourth grade without doing the things that come before it. So you're actually enabled to do other things, quote unquote, in the acting world by some of the work that you've done before that work. Is that supposition reasonable?
Well, I mean, I didn't act in class, I acted in college once. I had no acting experience, but a friend of mine was involved with acting, so he was always trying to get me to go out for a play, and finally I did. And of course, it was Shakespeare, because I'm not going to start real easy, am I? But the story was that I auditioned for it, and I got the role of Casca, which was cool. It was a middle of the road, you know, decent sized role. And then it turns out the person who was cast for Cassius dropped out, so I was offered Cassius, which is one of the three main leads, arguably. Not one of four. I mean, you have Mark Anthony, you have Caesar, and you have Brutus, and then Cassius, who was a conspirator to really knock off Caesar. So that kind of figure, right? Perfect role for me. Upset the quo in the leadership. So it was fascinating. I had never done a play before in my life, and here I am. I might have done some small things, but nothing like an acting class or anything. And here I am playing Cassius, Julius Caesar, Shakespeare production. So that was challenging, but fun at the same time. And then I did some TV things in the interim between that. I hosted some public access music shows from time to time. I did some sports broadcasting in college, my second stint in college. I did some stage things, but as far as full theater productions, it was several years before I was on stage again, and that was when I played Bernard in a production of Boeing Boeing at the Community Theater League, where I'm from, in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And it's Community Theater League is a great, great, great group. They do really wonderful productions and really talented people. But I digress. So I'm playing Bernard in Boeing Boeing, which is my first role on stage since really college, 20 plus years earlier, playing Cassius in Julius Caesar. So there was a learning curve there. It was a comedy. It's considered a door slammer comedy, so there's a lot of timing to it. And, there's only four people. Well, that's one. Bernard's the main character, so I'm like all of a sudden the male lead. So it's like twice I'm like thrown into the preaches. And then I didn't perform for a few years. And I saw they're doing a production. I auditioned for some things, didn't get cast. And I, so 3 years passed, and I went out for the role of I saw it was a casting of The Crucible at the Beauty Theater League. And I went there and wound up getting the role of Reverend Paris, which is a pretty beefy role as well. My first drama. Well, not really. Obviously, Shakespeare's a drama, but it was a drama. And so there I am, being the first person on stage with my bedridden daughter who was under, you know, did the whole stuff in the woods, which of course the base of The Crucible. So, yeah, it was interesting. So I decided to take some acting classes last fall at Wall Street Theater after the run of The Crucible was over. So I'm like, well, you know, if I can kind of wing it and fake it and get these roles, and maybe I have some sort of talent, latent talent of some type, and I might as well explore it.
Where was The Crucible performed?
It was in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, Community Theater League.
Oh, okay. And so, and then you moved from Williamsport to the Philly area.
Just very recently,
and
I'm still tied to Williamsport because I have a house there. So
right.
I'm living
but
two places right now.
You basically looked around and wanted to explore acting some more, and you saw some acting classes being given at the Wall Street Theater, the Walnut Street Theater?
Well, what happened was I after The Crucible was over with in September of last year, I there's a larger backstory to that, but I'm not going to go all the way back to that. But anyhow,
right. No, not
I wanted to explore acting further. I looked at maybe some online classes or something, and I didn't see anything. And then I saw that Walnut Street Theater offered classes, and I saw they offered an intro to acting. And despite the fact that I've been performing a few different things, I thought intro was a smart way to go. So I took the intro to acting class last fall with a wonderful teacher, Leah Walton, and learned the Stanislavski. Stanislavski, I think I may be mispronouncing it a bit. So that was
I believe that's the right name.
Yeah, and so that was kind of the method we learned a lot actually of working with people and creating your character and things and kind of getting out of your head and playing, being playful. And then in the winter, I took an improv class with another great teacher and an acting class, Sharon Geller. And that improv class really pushed me a bit in the beginning because I just wasn't used to playing like that. I wasn't used to just being silly and doing just stuff that just seemed like ridiculous. But then I really got in the swing of it, and I really enjoyed improv quite a bit. And so that added a whole other aspect to my performing and everything. Of course, you know, being a DJ, an on-air performer, an on-air personality, and going out and seeing events and things like that. So yeah, I've had some experience in those ways, but so I didn't come from like a background that was completely devoid of being in front of people or communicating to large groups of people in some way. So I think that's really the my background and everything. Now I'm taking an acting class with affordable acting with Kenneth McGregor, who's a really great acting teacher and actor and director, and has quite a resume behind him. And somewhere between borderline genius and madman, I think a little bit of both. And I find that class has really helped me grow, not just as an actor, but as a person. And I believe, tell me if you agree, that when you take a class, so to speak, and you not only are learning about whatever the class is about, but in the class, while taking the class, you learn things about yourself, some things you may not want to learn. You know, so a class, it takes you to your edge. And I'd say that's what this acting class is. So it's not always comfortable. It's not always easy. It's very humbling at times. But I've learned a lot about myself and still am. And I think that's part of what an actor is you're not – an actor isn't playing a role. The actor becomes a role. You become that character. You are that character once you step on stage, once you start learning the lines. So, you know, you don't play it acting.
It's interesting that there are classes that you take in this society where you learn some skills and you're able to perform them in a quote-unquote job setting, and you get money for that, but at the end of the day, you're not person. And
no,
that's a class that doesn't challenge you to grow. That's a class that basically says, in the morning you can pick up your tool belt and go out and be performing the following role, but at the end of the day you can put it down. And that's certainly something that a lot of people have, but they're the same person at the end of the day, and they haven't grown themselves. And that's completely different from a revolution in your perspective on life, from a revolution in the character that you play in your heart, or a complete change in how you see things. It's like you have this one character who goes through the first 40 some years of his life as completely submissive, completely docile to authority, and then over a transition period of, let's say, 15 years, comes to understand himself, or actually doesn't understand whether he should even be identifying with the form, quote-unquote, called human. And because he doesn't really identify with being a human, he identifies with being a writer inside a human body, or having perceptions coming out from inside, or quote-unquote, some word, maybe not inside, a human body, but says, okay, I'm not really within this human body, I'm sort of larger than that, and you completely change how you step. And you completely change your character role, because before you were restricted by mortality and you were restricted by these other things. And those are the types of classes that I like to take. And I think maybe those are the things I like to talk about with people, and I like to challenge people to go to the edge of their madness and go beyond the edge of their madness and lose their mind, because you will be able to pick it up after a few years, and you will find out that literally, like breaking out of an old mold, madness is like breathing. I mean, first you're quote-unquote in a particular configuration and well-adjusted, but you kind of have to go a little bit crazy in order to get to be someone else.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's an interesting way to look at it. You know, you really, how far down the rabbit hole can you go, in a sense? Because when you do break out of your comfort zone, you do things that are quote-unquote uncharacteristic to how people would perceive you to be, or they are uncomfortable with, or it goes up against their own or judgmental way, they will see you as crazy. because you're not doing what they want you to do or what they expect you to do or how they would anticipate you to behave or what you would do. And it makes them feel uncomfortable because they wouldn't, in a lot of cases, they wouldn't do it. And it pushes them to almost go like, well, why are they doing that? Why are they behaving that way? Why are they making these changes? They were, you know, I'm not comfortable with this. And then it becomes, and then that could be where they can throw shame onto someone for their changes, you know. Go back to being who I want you to be because I'm not comfortable right now. And you're not making me feel comfortable. So I want to feel comfortable. I want to be in my comfort zone. You're taking me out of my comfort zone. I don't like that. So get back to your comfort zone so I can be comfortable.
And it's so interesting because at a very young age, many people in quote unquote the classroom get violent if they see someone, you know, changing or being outside of the social norm. And it's not because there's something wrong with that person. It's that the person who's getting violence, social context and social perspective is being challenged.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right.
So with that backstory, with your backstory, I didn't want you to go cold into your story about what you're going to talk about. I wanted to let our audience know that you didn't go into the experience that you're going to talk about cold, and that you have you're not a newbie, and you have some appreciable background in theater and in public address and in playing various roles. And I mean, over a period of greater than 25 years, you have quite a few notches on your belt. I mean, you haven't been working continuously. You aren't a theater hand. But on the other hand, like myself, you have been doing public speaking and doing public interface at some level, and specifically in theater, for quite a long time. So basically, why don't you talk about your experience yesterday?
Oh, I never attended. Maybe not the first, but I haven't attended many. And, I mean, the experience was a lot of people there, and it was somewhat chaotic. There was, turned out there was two separate calls, and the thought was there was one. And, you know, there were people I saw in my acting class, and there was a lot of talent there, a lot of people. And you see firsthand all these people like myself and you that are working into the acting world and getting out of their comfort zone of not acting, or maybe they have acted for several years. But there are people of all ages, sizes, shapes, colors, personality types. And it was all like there was a community there. We were all going for the same thing. And slowly it started to take shape. It started to take shape where they would break people up to, they were going to be the scene partners so they could rehearse their lines. And it was in a situation where you'd be put into the room to do your scene. And then after you do your scene, you would leave. So it was very, but you may wait an hour, hour and a half till you get there, but that's how it works. You have a lot of people there to go through. But, you know, the place was nice, and they were very, very cordial, very friendly and welcoming. I'm sure they have their own agenda as well, and that agenda is to probably get people to sign up for their agency in addition to this. And our agendas were to get a role. The director's agenda was to hire people he felt that would be good for his productions. So, it was something where you really get a firsthand view of what that's like. And you know, you meet people and you network as well, because there could be someone who's there that, you know, I saw people that I was involved with the Pope production. I saw Anthony there and a couple other people. I saw the same one from the Philadelphia Experiment. But yeah, I'd say that it's networking community, really, because everyone's very, very nice. You know, you don't see a situation where the other people are there for the roles or like are standoffish or they're, you know, rude. Everyone's very friendly and very welcoming, going, hey, I know about this opportunity coming up, or I've had this happening, you know, check this out. So it's a great way to go further in your career just by meeting other people that are in the same situation you are. And, you know, the artifice aspect of it is that the place that's hosting it, they're trying to show their best face and show their, you know, I mean, the woman that owned it is beautiful. She's a very striking woman and was, you know, attired immaculately and sexily. So that was nice. And of course, that's what they're going to do. They're going to do it in a way that appeals to people. You know, that's just, as they say, sex sells. And that's, people may want to deny that, but it's one of the most primal instincts. I mean, procreation is there. The attraction in between the feminine and the masculine. It's how we're biologically wired, essentially. If not, we wouldn't exist now, would we? Because there would be no procreation. There would be no drive for procreation. It would just be like, oh, have a nice day. The human race, yeah, they don't exist anymore because they just like hanging out. You know. But I would say that the experience was a learning experience, and I look forward to more opportunities and network and meet other actors and people. I mean, that's how the show came about. You and I met on the set of the Pope. So
it's very interesting. There's a very interesting saying, and it's called, oh, you were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I have a perfect example of that.
Go ahead.
In college, I was doing work study, and work study involved a lot of different things. And I was in the meeting with the person who was in charge of work study at the time at the college, going over what different options for me. None of them were that great, to be honest with you. And while I was there, they got a phone call, and they're like, "Oh, this residence hall is looking for a mail clerk. You're interested?" I'm like, "I'll take that." So that was my work was a mail clerk.
Hello.
Which is cool. I did it for 2 years. What?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
You dropped out.
Okay, no. So that's what I did for 2 years. I worked as a mail clerk as my work study program.
Are you working in the post office or what?
No, residence hall. It was a residence hall, and in the residence hall, that's what we did. That's what I did. I was the person that would put the mail for people that were getting their mail, and I was a mail clerk.
So basically that was sort of how you earned your tuition, or why were you doing work study?
Yeah, it was because, you know, there was a work study program involved to help pay part of, you know, I was paid for
gotcha.
It. So it was like work study. I don't know the
right.
details of it now. But yeah, it was like
right.
it was
so
work
basically
study.
It was,
you know,
there was a quid pro quo where you got paid and you got classes for it or something like that?
No, I just got paid. I just got paid.
I'm not hearing you again.
Are you there? Yeah, I'm not. Can you hear me? I mean, I'm not on mute or anything. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you again. But you dropped out for like 30 seconds.
It could be all this. Could be all this rain that's falling here.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's possible. Weather can affect this. Can affect the signal sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
But that's an example of being in the right place at the right time. That's an example of being in the right place at the right time, that little story.
Yeah, you're dropping out again.
Well, I'm not sure what's going on. But that's an example, as I said, of being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and I just like to... That's an interesting example, but the usual, what I was trying to play with was the usual, when people hear that, they say, oh, you were lucky. And how I've come to appreciate it is right place, right time. You can be in your bed and have a right place, right time. Or you can put yourself into a really, really uncomfortable situation where you're way outside your comfort zone, way, way, way over your edge or on your edge, and you can have and it's something that happens there. And the thing that's going to happen in your bedroom, in your bed, when you're curled up under the carpet, under the covers, is going to be the set of circumstances that could happen there. I mean, maybe lightning strikes. I mean, maybe somebody comes through your door and hands you a lottery ticket, something like that. But
right.
the set of circumstances that you manufacture for yourself by going on this crazy bus ride in the middle of the night and being someplace that you, I mean, one of the most interesting things about being an extra actor is you get to go places and you get to be in situations that you would never, you couldn't pay. I couldn't pay somebody $1 million to be to stand where I was standing earlier this week or last week, whichever way you want to work at it. But I actually had someone paying me to do that. That's, I mean, it's just like, oh, that's crazy. Kind of, as far as, I mean, I really want to encourage everybody, and I know David wants to encourage everybody to do the same thing, to be someone else and to make choices, to leave yourself behind and to make choices as if you were someone else. Because like acting, I mean, if you look at yourself and you say, I'm a character and I have particular ways of acting, and you observe that and you say, okay, I'm not going to do this action this way anymore. I'm going to act this way and do something like this. Like the Matrix, when Neo learns a different skill set, you change your character. And that's what you were saying before, when someone who went with you, who was familiar with you in high school, sees you again at the umpteenth reunion, they still expect you to be that person that they knew in high school. And that's the only relation that they have to you. And they're only going to be relating to you through that character evaluation. And that's how people aren't willing to say, well, I only knew you in 1979. And 40 years later, I have no idea who you are. Or even more freeing is to say, I saw you yesterday. Who are you today? I have no, you're a complete stranger to me. I don't know who you are.
And in regards to that, is there any more absurd statement than to death do us part?
Than to what?
I said, in regards to that, is there any more absurd statement than till death do us part?
Oh, well, the other foundational statement that I keep on talking about on this program is that if you think really hard about everything in this society, if you think really, really hard and you're willing to be in a lot of discomfort, this society is 100% fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people that created it want to have people graduate and to have people say, yeah, I agree, it's a fraud, and I have to make my own life if I want one.
I would agree with that. You could say it's a scam.
Well, and it's not a scam. It's why are we here? We're here to basically say, this isn't suited for me. I see what it is, and to move on and actually take your life in your hands instead of giving your life to someone else's hands. Well,
yeah, I mean,
are you there?
The thing is that there's two things. And I was talking to my roommate brought this up, actually, and it's true. We really have to kind to ourselves. I don't think we're taught that. I think we're taught that we're kind to ourselves, we're being selfish, or we're being egotistical or narcissistic, whatever. But we have to be kind to ourselves, and that's part of actually breaking out of the comfort zone. Because if you're kind to yourself, you're not as hard on your failures. If you're not as hard on your failures, guess what? You're open to taking chances. And if you're open to taking chances, it means you're open to breaking out of your comfort zone. You're open to going to your edge. But if you're hard on yourself and you're not kind, you're going to be stuck. And I'm as guilty of this as anyone else, still up to this day. You're not going to grow, because you're just going to beat yourself up over everything. And you're going to keep yourself from breaking free of anything, because you're going to be so petrified of failure or fear, you know, or change, that you're going to stay in a form of stasis. And that's the true tragedy. So I believe that it's important to be kind to yourself. It's important to nourish and nurture yourself. You know, give yourself self-love. Give yourself a hug, silly as it sounds. The action of it makes a difference. Any action makes a difference. But that's really one of the keys to breaking free of a self-made prison, is to be open to failure and mistakes, and don't see them as such. See them as ways of growth.
See them as training.
Yeah, training, sure. In training, if you're not training, then you're kind of making it some kind of like, you're still going to be, a person's still being hard on themselves. It's just, it's a process. Life's about processes and experiences. I basically say,
okay, if you want to start over, it's like day one going to and saying, I'm going to get I'm going to go get some martial arts training, and I'm going to walk onto the mat, and it's going to be day one, and then it's going to be day 50, and then it's going to be day 100, and it's still going to hurt, and I'm still not going to know anything. And how long is it going to take? Well, all of that is training. And if you allow yourself to say, I can't, if you can allow yourself to be kind, as you just said, and say, I can only look at it as pure enjoyment of learning a new skill, whereas a lot of people would look at it and say, I'm embarrassed, I'm bruised, I hurt someplace that I didn't believe that it was possible to hurt, and I want to stop. If you instead persist to the point of, you know, either it breaks you or you break it, and you attain a different level of skill. That's what life is about. Life is about that fear edge. And that's pretty much ingrained by how the society basically says there's this riddle called failure and success.
And they're one and the same, aren't they?
Failure is the road to failure is nothing other. Well, there's a word that's used pretty commonly in yoga and meditation, and they don't ever really allow a practitioner to say that they're doing anything other than practice. And it's also a word that's used for what a doctor does, because a doctor has a practice, and that means that they're always practicing. I mean, you'd expect them to actually get to a level where they weren't practicing anymore because they're working on you, but they're actually practicing. So there's a lot of words, and they bring too much, and so you need to kind of give up on those words.
Yeah, and our greatest failures can be our greatest successes. I mean,
oh, I completely agree with that.
but I think that there's a, I learned this from someone that was in communication with for several months. We're not communicating now, but she taught me about the importance of being of sitting with our pain and not being present with it, as opposed to hiding it or, oh, I don't feel it, but really, you know, acknowledging it as part of who we are. Our pain, our trauma, or the areas where we're bruised or emotionally tender or a state of that vulnerability, that place where we don't become afraid of going within ourselves and feeling that pain, whatever it could be. And being open to feeling that and expressing it and being open to the expression of it emotionally. And that comes with accepting the difference between that there's no difference between failure and success, because like a success today could be a failure tomorrow. I spent years trying to get a job at a particular radio station, and once I got it, I thought it was a success. not that long, a couple years later, I realized it really wasn't what I wanted to do because of failure. And if I looked at it that way, you know. So the only time there's winners and losers is really in sports. And even then, is there really a loser? Because let's think about it. If you look at sports just for a minute, as I go into this tangent, even if you're the worst team, you get the best draft pick. So you get something for your, you know, for quote-unquote being the loser. So we have a society of winners and losers, and it's not always that easy. It's not always that clear. And it creates this mentality that everything that we do is being judged, you know, good, bad, success, failure, yes, no. And that duality becomes a trap. And it becomes something that holds us back. Because we have to be able to acknowledge that we're gonna make mistakes. We're gonna do things that aren't smart. We're gonna make fools of ourselves. Everyone does. I mean, and that's a hard lesson to learn sometimes because we don't want to see ourselves that way. And to kind of weave it back, oddly enough, to karaoke, it does take vulnerability to go up and sing in front of people. It's fun, it's play, but there's still a certain, you know, you're the only thing to stand between you and everyone else, depending on if it's friends or a public place or whatever, is you and the microphone. And I mentioned that to Alexander in that great show we had last week, which I talked about how people get up and read at her shows and or talk, you know, as the artist is talking. And when you're sharing with someone that you've written, you've never read to anyone before, or maybe just to people you know, and you're expressing that to a group of strangers, essentially, it really leaves you open. The only thing separating you is just the space between you and those people. And when you're up singing for karaoke, for example, the only thing separating you is the microphone, that space, and the people. So it is it's something that is an example of how even when we're trying to be playful, we can be vulnerable. And things that seem fun can still be a way to grow. If you allow it to be that way, if you open yourself up to the idea that, well, this is silly, but I'm growing. And that's really a lot of what improv is, to be honest. Get you the most silly things, but it gets you out of your head. It gets you to think on your feet, or, you know, or just be more intuitive, more like reaching inspiration and not analytical.
Yeah, I think the subject of vulnerability and safety and bravery and fear is a topic for another night. But I'd like to thank you for spending this time on the show tonight, David. And how can
thank
people
you,
get
Alan.
In touch with you? How can people get in touch with you off the air if they'd like to do that?
Well, they can email me at dwhitman0906@gmail.com.
Well, thanks so much. And everyone,
yeah, thank you.
Please explore your edges. Please get out there and engage your passions. And I'm Alan Ritter, and this is my show, An Emerging Forest, on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. And I run a small produce club, produce distribution network. because I'm close to a wholesaler and because I can get discount wholesale prices on organic produce in the Philadelphia area, if you're interested in that and you're on Facebook, that can be accessed.us, or drop me an email at Ritter, R-I-T-T-E-R, period, A-L-A-N, 88, at gmail.com. And thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again, David, for being on again. And everybody have a great week, and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.